Amateur Radio Newsline Report number 2454 with a release date of Friday, November 8th, 2024, to follow in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. The following is a QST. Radio amateurs respond to deadly floods in Spain. Another major tower collapses in the U.S. And a once sleepy satellite marks 50 years in space. All this and more as Amateur Radio Newsline Report number 2454 comes your way right now.
From around the world, this is Newsline, Amateur Radio's first independent, on-the-air news and bulletin service. Now, reporting from Wadsworth, Ohio, Stephen Kinford, N8WB.
Our top story takes us to Spain, where hams are among the many volunteers helping vital messages get through in a region where people's lives have been swept away by floodwaters. Jeremy Boot, G4NJH, has those details.
As parts of Spain were overtaken by historic flooding, two groups provided emergency radio communications through VHF and UHF repeaters in the hard-hit region. Greg Mossop, G0DUB, the IARU Region 1 Emergency Communications Coordinator, told Newsline that much of the response came from REMER, the government civil protection radio network, which draws membership from the amateur community. Other hams were deployed from EMCOM España, the emergency communications group of the URE, the Spanish National Amateur Radio Society, whose messages proved vital as flash floods pounded eastern Spain, trapping and killing people in the unrelenting weather conditions. Greg told Newsline that the regions most affected included the communities near Valencia, Murcia and Andalusia. The IARU received its reports from José Antonio Méndez Ríos, EA9E, the emergency spokesman for URE and the national coordinator of EMCOM España. Meanwhile, as officials assessed the flood damage, search parties were dispatched to seek out those reported missing. This is Jeremy Boot, G4NJH.
A prominent educator in Israel has achieved international recognition for her work in using wireless signals to aid in prediction of extreme weather, such as flash floods. We hear about her from Graham Kemp, VK4BB.
Hagit Meshe-Yaron has been honored by the IEEE for her work in harnessing wireless signals to collect weather data to serve as a reliable predictor of floods. She was inspired to assist meteorologists who had told her years ago that predictions are not always possible or consistent when using radar, satellites, and other tools. Working with a research team, she found a more reliable method using wireless communication. The process involves use of algorithms developed by her and her team and applied to data collected from communication networks. This technique, which was tested first in Israel, can predict flash floods by extracting the data from measurements in the difference between the amplitude of the signals transmitted and those received. She is hoping to apply it to communication networks globally. Her hope is that people would be alerted well in advance of a storm and could be evacuated from affected areas sooner. For her work, she has received the Medal for Environmental and Safety Technologies from the IEEE, where she is also a Life Fellow. This is Graham Kemp, VK4BB.
In the U.S., another broadcast tower has collapsed, this one in the state of Missouri, marking the third such incident in October. Randy Sly, W4XJ, has that story.
The tower of Missouri AM radio station KRMO, 990 kilohertz, collapsed on the 24th of October after one of its guy wires snapped, according to industry media reports. The incident marked the third destruction of a U.S. broadcast tower in October. Local media reports said that one of the co-owners, Dwayne Gandy, of Eagle Broadcasting, witnessed the collapse as he was mowing nearby. The tower was 75 years old, and maintenance work had recently been performed. While the owners make plans to restore a tower to the site, the station is transmitting via sharing access on the KSWM AM 940 kilohertz tower in Aurora, Missouri. Earlier in October, a broadcast tower collapsed in Houston, Texas, after a helicopter crashed into it, leaving four dead. In Albuquerque, New Mexico, station KKOB AM was knocked off the air after its tower was destroyed by the impact of a hot air balloon. The three passengers were reported safe after that incident. This is Randy Sly, W4XJ.
A science education center at the site of the former Arecibo radio telescope is delaying its much-awaited opening to the public, as we hear from Travis Lisk, N3ILS.
Following a pilot program held this summer that opened its doors to students and educators by invitation only, the Scientific Education and Research Center at the site of the former Arecibo Observatory has had its opening delayed until the new year. The National Science Foundation facility in Puerto Rico is known as the Arecibo Center for Culturally Relevant and Inclusive Science Education, Computational Skills, and Community Engagement, or NCF Arecibo C3. It was originally scheduled to open in November. Center administrators said the delay would provide more time for the transport of essential equipment and preparation to make the facility more accessible. One of C3's original collaborators, Universidad del Sagrado Corazón, recently ended its involvement with the center, expressing pride in its first year of work with others on the team. The university's provost and VP for academic affairs said in a statement, quote, "These partnerships and structures have now been successfully initiated, and the remaining institutions involved in the project will continue this important work," end quote. The National Science Foundation announcement said the delayed opening to the public will also allow adjustments in C3's organizational structure. Opening day is expected to coincide with the National Science Foundation's 75th anniversary. The goal of the center is to provide a place for STEM education and research that honors the historic Arecibo Observatory, which was dismantled after its collapse in 2020. This is Travis Lisk, N3ILS.
Meanwhile, a draft report about the 2020 collapse that led to the dismantling of the Arecibo Observatory's 305-meter telescope has pinpointed what is believed to be the root cause. A pre-publication document from the National Academies made available to the public online said that investigators found, quote, "unprecedented and accelerated long-term zinc creep induced failure," end quote. In other words, the failure occurred in the radio telescope's cable sockets, vital components that were designed to support the 900-ton platform that was above the dish. The data analysis was conducted by the University of Central Florida and the National Science Foundation. The telescope's construction occurred between 1960 and 1963. Investigators believe that the sequence of events leading to the collapse may have begun with Hurricane Maria, which hit the telescope as a Category 4 in 2017. The report noted that inspections before the storm found the zinc leading edge to be intact, but in late 2018 and early 2019, cable slippage was detected. Another crisis was resolved aboard the Voyager 1 deep space probe by turning back the clock on technology. Kent Peterson, KC0DGY, tells us what happened.
For Voyager 1, there was another disturbing incident of radio silence all over again. A shutdown in October of the X-band radio transmitter left the space probe unable to communicate with the deep space network. The mission team linked the problem to a command that had been sent to turn on one of Voyager's heaters. The team believes the command somehow activated the spacecraft's fault protection system, which conserves its power. That lowered the data rate transmission and shut off the X-band transmitter, instead engaging the S-band transmitter. Recounting the sequence of events in the Voyager blog, NASA's Tony Gracias wrote that the S-band transmission, which has a fainter signal than X-band and consumes less power, had not been used by the space team since 1981. S-band operates on frequencies between 2 and 4 GHz, whereas X-band uses frequencies in the range between 8 and 12 GHz. The NASA blogger wrote, quote, "The flight team was not certain the S-band could be detected on Earth due to the spacecraft's distance, but engineers with the Deep Space Network were able to find it," end quote. The old S-band transmitter has turned in a reliable performance since October 24th, even from a distance of more than 15 billion miles, or 24 billion kilometers from Earth, and will remain in use while the team continues its troubleshooting. According to the blog, quote, "It may take days or weeks before the team can identify the underlying issue that triggered the fault protection system," end quote. This is Kent Peterson, KC0, DGY.
Time for you to identify your station. We're the amateur radio newsline heard on bulletin stations around the world, including the WD8IIJ repeater of the Steubenville-Weirton Amateur Radio Club on Fridays at 8 p.m. local time in Steubenville, Ohio. NASA has launched LignoSat, a wooden satellite built by Japanese researchers. It was successfully sent to the International Space Station on Tuesday, November 5th, headed to the International Space Station. Newsline first reported on its development in 2021 as a partnership between Kyoto University and a Japanese home building company, Sumitomo Forestry. It is expected to be released into orbit about 250 miles or 400 kilometers above the Earth. LignoSat is an experiment using space-grade wood to build environmentally friendly satellites. Meanwhile, New Zealand has been busy with its WISA WoodSat, a 1-kilogram amateur radio satellite built in Finland. When launched by a rocket, it is expected to reach an orbit about 310 to 340 miles or between 500 and 550 kilometers above Earth. The microsatellite has already completed a test flight in the stratosphere, 30 kilometers above Earth, aboard a weather balloon. A $1.8 million grant has been given to HAMSI for its continued work studying the ionosphere. Andy Morrison, K9AWM, tells us what's planned next.
The citizen science investigators of HAMSI have received $1.8 million in additional support from the National Science Foundation to support their ongoing studies of the ionosphere. The announcement was made by HAMSI founder Nathaniel Frissell, W2NAF, who said the funding would be used for various kinds of equipment to measure different aspects of the ionosphere's behavior. They include 10 Whispersonde transmitters to be a source of GPS-stabilized HF beacon signals. The funding will also support a network, now in development, comprising 30 standardized receive stations that can observe HF Doppler shifts, whisper transmissions, VLF transmissions, the geomagnetic field, and natural radio emissions. Nathaniel said the network being established will be, quote, the only widespread, coordinated high-frequency, very low-frequency, and ground magnetometer measurement network that is distributed primarily across the mid-latitude region, end quote. According to an announcement by the University of Scranton, where Nathaniel is an associate professor in physics and engineering, he will be the lead principal investigator of the collaborative work done under the grant with researchers at Case Western Reserve University, the University of Alabama, and the New Jersey Institute of Technology. These projects are a continuation of the ongoing work by HAMSI, which involved amateur radio participation in solar eclipse QSO parties this year and last year. HAMS were able to contribute data that helped researchers better understand the impact of the annular solar eclipse and the total solar eclipse had on the ionosphere. This is Andy Morrison, K9AWM.
In Alaska, an island community off the coast of the mainland has become a little bit less of an island now because of amateur radio. George Safaropoulos, KJ6VU, has that story.
Members of the Petersburg Volunteer Fire Department have always been ready to respond from their fire hall if an emergency strikes their island overlooking Frederick Sound. The hard work and generosity of one local ham has just made the fire hall a whole lot more ready. Gary Treffrey, WL7LV, has donated two transceivers, tuners, and antennas, along with wires, power supplies, and an amplifier, and established an amateur radio station there. The goal isn't just enhanced emergency response, but the creation of a new local ham radio club based at the fire hall. Communication is key in this part of the northernmost state of the U.S. Emergency Services Director Aaron Hankins told the local paper The Pilot, "We are islands. There's no one we can just drive down the road and get communications from, but we hope to have that added capability." There are already some resources locally. Alaskan hams are part of the Amateur Radio Emergency Service, or ARES. More than 100 hams also participate in the Alaska Pacific Emergency Preparedness Net, or APNET, where Gary is a member. Aaron Hankins said he is hoping to see more hams get involved at the fire hall after the project is completed. He added, "I hope that we never have to use his contribution in an emergency fashion, but we'll definitely be very glad to have this capability if the need arises." This is George Zafaropoulos, KJ6VU.
With Hamvention 2025 set for the weekend of May 16th, the organizers are asking prospective attendees to ponder the question of what radio independence means to them. That is, in fact, the theme for the convention in Xenia, Ohio. In announcing the theme, the Hamvention team says, quote, "In the course of history, radio has been heavily regulated and, in some instances, banned altogether. We are fortunate to enjoy these freedoms, and for us at Hamvention, we are proud of our radio independence. What does radio independence mean to you?" End quote. Hopefully, there will be many answers found in the workshops, seminars, and eyeball Q shows at the Greene County Fairgrounds. In the world of DX, listen for Theo PA3CBH on the air as 3D2TP from VT Levu, IOTA number OC016 in Fiji, from the 8th of November to the 12th of December. He is operating QRP on SSB and QRS-CW, QSL via his home call. Andry W9KM is active holiday style as ZF2KM from Grand Cayman Island, IOTA number NA016 until the 12th of November. He is operating CW and the digital modes with a focus on 30, 17, and 12 meters. See QRZ.com for QSL details. We end this week's report with a story, one that could be called Sleeping Beauty, or perhaps more correctly, Rip Van Winkle. Either way, this story really is a sleeper, as you will hear from Neil Rapp, WB9VPG.
This is no fairy tale. It's a story that begins on November 15th of 1974 with the launch of a little satellite, a small sat called AO7. For 6.5 years, it delighted amateur radio operators who made use of it worldwide. As time went on, however, AMSAT knew that it would soon be time to say goodbye. By 1980, the cells in the satellite's NICAD battery began to fail over a period of weeks into 1981. Thus began the big sleep of SmallSat AO7. That is, until its sudden awakening, which AMSAT said could only have been possible if the battery developed an open circuit. Still, there was no mistaking this wakeful voyager. In 2002, Perry Klein, W3PK, AMSAT's first president, received a phone call from satellite enthusiast Pat Gowain, G3IOR, alerting him to the fact that he'd just picked up Morse code telemetry on AO7's former beacon frequency. It was confirmed. Soon other hams heard it too. Like Rip Van Winkle in the classic short story by Washington Irving, satellite AO7 had officially ended a slumber that was 2 decades long. Throughout November, AMSAT News Service will be honoring this oldest active amateur radio satellite with articles retelling its exciting story. Visit the link in the text version of this week's newscast at arnewsline.org. We promise you'll have no trouble staying awake. This is Neil Rapp, WB9VPG.
If a good day of radio is like poetry to you, pick up a pencil and join the Amateur Radio Newsline Haiku Challenge. Share your experience by sending an original haiku to us here at Newsline. Use the entry form on our website, arnewsline.org, and please follow the rules for writing your 3-line haiku. Sorry, but we cannot accept any entries that aren't written in traditional haiku form. Share with fellow listeners the poetry that is inspired by your ham radio experience. With thanks to Amateur Radio Daily, AMSAT News Service, C3 Website, David Bihar, K7DB Engineering News Record, 425 DX News, Greg Masopo, G0DUB, Gizmodo, Hamvention, IARU Region 1, IEEE Spectrum, National Academies, National Science Foundation, Petersburg Pilot, QRZ.com, Radio and TV Business Report, Radio Inc., Reuters, ShortwaveRadio.de, University of Scranton, Wireless Institute of Australia, and you, our listeners. That's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline. We remind our listeners that Amateur Radio Newsline is an all-volunteer nonprofit organization that incurs expenses for its continued operation. If you wish to support us, please visit our website at arnewsline.org and know that we appreciate you all. We also remind our listeners that if you like our newscasts, please leave us a 5-star rating wherever you subscribe to us. For now, with Karen Eve Murray, KD2GUT at the news desk in New York and our news team worldwide, I'm Stephen Kinford, NAWB in Wadsworth, Ohio, saying 73. And as always, we thank you for listening. Amateur Radio Newsline is copyright 2024, all rights reserved.